This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Listening to the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us once again. Thank you so much for joining me. And I get to share another phenomenal story on today's podcast. We head to New Zealand and we catch up with Diana Simpson on today's show to talk about some of the struggles and the things she's had to overcome to not only race in Ironman, but race competitively. She is an absolute machine, and I delve into her story today, and I think you're going to love it. You're going to absolutely love it. She is a wife, she's a mom, and yeah, she's got some great stories to tell. So that's all coming up on today's podcast. And before we get into that, if I could just say thanks to everyone who has been sharing this podcast. I asked last week if you do get any value out of this, to share it with your triathlon mates, training buddies, club mates, whoever you do train with. And the numbers are really showing that it is working. So if you wouldn't mind, continue doing that. It helps us massively. I've been sharing some of my goals on the podcast with you, particularly towards the end of last year for 2018. And I can tell you that I set the goal to do 1 million downloads in 2018, which was pretty much doubling my numbers from 2017. And the good news is we are pretty much almost halfway through May as I record this, and we are almost halfway there. So we are a month ahead of schedule. We are on track to do about 1.2 million downloads this year. Yes. So now I'm not going to count chickens before they hatch, but things seem to be on the rise, which is awesome news. And what that means is if you have a business that's in the triathlon space and you'd like to get in front of that many triathletes, please pop me a mail, brad@thekonaedge.com. We are open for business, and I'd love for you to engage with me. If there is an opportunity for us to work together to help promote your business here on the Kona Edge, I'm all ears. That's brad@thekonaedge.com is my email address. Enough of me yakking. Let's get into today's podcast. Today's coach in the spotlight is Coach Stephen Brands and Next Level Triathlon. They've proved their results year after year. Steve has personally guided athletes to an ITU Age Group World Championship, Ironman Hawaii, and has qualified over 20 athletes to the 70.3 World Championships. Steve isn't your traditional multi-sport coach. He's a full-time endurance coach who works with athletes remotely as well as athletes in a DTE in Madison, Wisconsin. Steve is also one of a few coaches in the USA High Performance Mentorship Coaching Program, where he gets to work with the select high performance athletes in the USAT CRP program. In 2015, Steve was selected to run a week-long Cam Tri Camp in Trinidad and Grenada, where he was responsible for working with their top athletes as well as educating their coaches on proper racing, training, and season preparation. Some of Steve's athletes have won an ITU Age Group World Championship, won multiple USAT Age Group National Championships, won USAT Duathlon National Championships, podiumed at the 2016 Ironman World Championships, have run sub-3-hour marathon during the Ironman, and qualified athletes to Ironman and 70.3 World Championships. If you'd like to find out more about Steve and Next Level Triathlon, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching or click through to nextleveltriathlon.org. All the details on that website, okay? That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured here on the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to that exact webpage. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Well, it's off to New Zealand we go now to catch up with our next age grouper. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome Diana Simpson onto the podcast. Diana, welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Brad. Great to be here.
That is a very Kiwi accent. You're from Auckland. Home is Auckland on the North Island. I've seen sort of triathlon popping up and growing. It's pretty big in New Zealand. It's a very popular sport, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems to be. Every year we seem to see more and more people out on their bikes and getting involved in the local triathlons held in Auckland here, and also the big ones, which are in Te Taupo and Wanaka. So, it is a big sport, and it is definitely growing. So it's really great to see, especially from the youths coming right up through to us oldies. So yeah, it's really, really good.
And I was going to say, Diana, I mean, one of the reasons is because you've got a couple of amazing races. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet, and I'm sure you're blessed to be able to live and race and do what you do where you do.
Yeah, we are. I think we're quite a unique country in that I think anywhere, well, mostly anywhere, you can find a beach from your doorstep or a river or a lake. You can find some decent hills to ride and some beautiful off-trail roads to run. The two Ironman distance races, they're set in the most scenic places in New Zealand itself. So, yeah, we are. We're really, really blessed. So it's great.
And as destination races go, it's a long way to go, but definitely worth it.
Well, for me, it's only 3 hours away.
Yeah, for you, it's not. For the rest of us, it is.
Yeah, look, it is great. It's, you know, we've also got the Hobbits down here and Taika Waititi, I think that's how you mention his name or pronounce his name. But yeah, no, New Zealand's a great place. It's got a really great atmosphere. I think you know, in terms of the rest of the world, we're up there with one of the safest places in the world to be. That's just my background coming in. I deal in anti-money laundering, so I do check out what the rest of the world's doing. And so New Zealand, it's one of those picturesque places to come down and hang out. And the temperature's relatively mild, and you get some beautiful, stunning sunny days as well. So it's great.
And you've got a half decent rugby team too, on top of that.
Yeah. And our league team, the Warriors, they're making a comeback. So it's great to see that. We've got some good things happening down here.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your sort of entry in the sport. Where did it all start for you, Diana?
I was a bit of a latecomer into the sport. I think I was about 28, 29 years of age when I sort of got introduced to it. And my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, I'd been seeing him for a while, and he asked me whether or not he could train and compete for something called the Ironman. And I thought, yeah, sure, let's go for it. I thought it's going to be held in Australia, and he was going to do some surf life-saving competitions over there. So I'd actually never heard of Ironman before. I thought it was related to the whole surf life-saving scene over in Australia. When he decided to take me down to Taupo and do it down there, I got a bit of a shock. I think it was at that point the seed was sort of sown for me when I not only saw him, but these ladies that were probably in their 60s and, older, chugging along on the run, just grinding it out and looking terrible, but, you know, just really pounding it. And I thought, geez Louise, you know, they've been out here for 13, 14, 15 hours and they're still going. And I thought, how in the world are these ladies managing to do it? So after that, it's sort of I had a bit of an inkling that I might want to get involved in the sport. And so 2011, I think it was, 2010 for Christmas, I got a road bike. And 2011, I approached my husband's coach and said I wanted to do an Ironman. And I said to him, oh, don't want to tell my husband. I want to make it a surprise so that on the day I'll tell him that I'm going to do an Ironman and I'll do it and I'll impress him and all of that. So kept it hush-hush for a few months, and something must have clicked with my husband because he had me up about it. I told him, and he wasn't pleased, and he was a bit upset. And he said, you know, one of the first things you need to do is actually check with your family and your friends to make sure that they're on board with it, because it's a massive sacrifice, not only from the athlete's point of view, but from everyone else's. So, I had a few learnings from that year. So that was quite interesting, but apart from that, we got through that, and he was all for me giving it a bit of a go.
Was it just supposed to be a one and done, or was it something that you knew was going to be around for a long time?
Well, at the time I thought, oh, I'll just give this a go and tick the box. So it was 2012, March of 2012 was the Ironman I was going to compete in. But there was a storm that had come through and actually reduced the event to a half Ironman. So, you know, in some respects, I was quite disappointed. But overall, especially when I was coming through on the bike, I was so relieved that it was a half Ironman, because the training that was that led up to that point was really inconsistent. I sandbagged the whole way. I was more interested in drinking and dancing and sleeping in and going out for smashed avocado on toast for brunch, and I sort of didn't really take the training seriously enough. I sort of thought it was more of a burden. So I guess I was sort of expecting a bit of a walk in the park, and that was a real comeuppance for me at that 2012 event that was reduced. So during that race, I thought, okay, I've got to get serious about this. This is actually a big commitment. And so afterwards, sort of spoke about it, and everyone was quite disappointed. And you know, I decided that, yep, I'm going to do an Ironman, and I'm going to do it properly. So 2013 was going to be the first Ironman I was going to do. So that led to another year's worth of training, which, to be honest, there was a bit more consistency there, but I think that was the year that I really hit a lot of walls mentally and physically. I hadn't done any sport since school, so you know, the level of fitness was pretty low, and I just sort of didn't understand triathlon and training. There's some key concepts that I just didn't understand, and it didn't click with me. So going into the 2013 event, there was a bit more consistency there, but you know, I think I was quite lucky on the day. I think I placed third in my age group, and I think it was a roll down to the next slot, and I managed to pick that up, to the surprise of my coach, who once again gave me the Sandbaggers Award. So which led to another triathlon later on in the year.
That's how they suck you into the sport. If you're listening to this and you're thinking you're going to do a one and done, it's never the case. Absolutely never the case. Dana, you mentioned that you finished third in your age group, and you said you were quite lucky, and you hadn't done sport from school days. Growing up, were you active? Were you pretty good at certain things? What were you into?
Yeah, look, as a kid, I was pretty active. I was into all the school sports. My mum, she's a teacher, and I went to the same school as her. And I've got two siblings, an older sister and a younger brother, and we're all close in age. So, you know, not only was I active, I was pretty competitive, and I had fear of missing out on everything. And I did love learning about things, and I was always questioning a lot if I didn't quite understand it. And I guess the competitiveness, it really sort of came through with, you know, school sports and sibling rivalry. I mean, there was a lot of physical fights between us you know, competing for our mum's attention. And, you know, I mean, I remember my sister and I, we had guitar lessons, and I remember there was a night where we performed in front of a whole group of people, and my aim was to finish first before my sister as quickly as possible. So I'd completely ruined the whole performance just by going as fast as I could, to the horror and delight of my mum, who was in the audience. So, yeah, so there was that there, and, you know, I really enjoyed the sports. And then I went off to uni, and that's sort of where it all sort of fell apart for me. That competitiveness and fear of missing out all sort of transferred into drinking and dancing and just doing stupid things. You know, I was down in the South Island at a university down there, and I guess I just let loose, as a lot of kids do when they go off to uni. That competitiveness and activeness and focus didn't extend into the papers I was studying. So I was lucky enough to pass by the skin of my teeth and get my degree. But it was when I started working, that's where I sort of came back on track again, and I started getting into, you know, a bit of running, social running and stuff, and I sort of found a balance between the socialising and working and having a bit of an active life. So, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about those. I mean, you mentioned you hit a couple of walls in that first sort of period in the sport where you hadn't sort of learnt the nuances yet. Tell me a little bit about those struggles and what it was that you had to overcome.
Yeah, so look, with the training program, so I had a coach. My husband's coach, I poached him, he'd give me a training program. And one of the things was, back in those days, it was on an Excel spreadsheet. We now use Training Peaks. What I used to do was I used to have 4 days of doing absolutely nothing, and then cram all of my training into the last sort of 4 or 5 days. So there were some days there where I actually ended up doing 3 runs in the same day. So no idea about, you know, spreading these sessions in the correct way or in the right order, and I would deliberately keep this from my coach, just thinking that, you know, I've done it, and so I would completely destroy myself and then, you know, repeat that process the week after. So not really getting the best out of me for that week. And there were other times where it would have been the bike where I struggled the most. I used to absolutely hate getting on that bike and going outside. And the Kiwi winters here are pretty dismal. They get pretty cold and wet. And there were a number of times where my husband was great. He would pull me out of bed and get me on that bike out into the Waitax, and there were times there where I would just stop on the side of the road and swear my head off at him for no reason, and, you know, just break down and bore my eyes out and throw all my nutrition at him, and just stand there going, what have I just done? So it was just these mental barriers where it was just like, I don't want to do this, but I know I have to, in order to actually get across that finish line at Taupo. And, you know, there were times there as well where I'm just remembering I joined a swim squad, and it was between 6 o'clock in the morning. It started at 6 in the morning. So my husband would literally kick me out of bed and make sure that I got into the car. And there were times there where I'd get into the car and I would fall asleep in the car in the driveway, or I would drive to the swimming pool and sleep in the car there and then drive home afterwards and not even get into the pool. So it felt like I sort of, you know, I'm sort of thinking now, like, why did I get into the sport if, you know, I didn't really want to in the first place. But I guess I just had to overcome each of those. And I guess my husband, you know, he did have to do a lot of pushing with me, because, you know, on the one hand, I didn't want to do this, but on the other hand, I desperately wanted to do this Ironman, and I wanted to be able to say, yep, I can do what you can do. And in my mind at that time, I thought, and I can do it better. So yes, those were some of the walls that I hit at that period in time, and nutrition wise as well, I failed a lot in terms of that. I had no idea about what to eat, and also, everyday eating was just pretty pathetic, to be honest. I was still living the life of a uni student, I think, in some respects. So. It was quite hard, I found, and just breaking away from the social life, late nights, drinking, dancing, and just trying to get that balance there. So yeah, it was really hard.
Your hubby sounds like an absolute keeper. How important is it to have a really strong support structure around you and to keep that balance? I mean, you mentioned you work full time as well. How do you keep that balance of keeping all the balls in the air that you need to keep in the air?
Yeah, look, you're right. I've been told by tens or scores of people that I'm very lucky to have him in my life, and I might be a bit of a mess if he wasn't. Yeah, look, especially with the sport, you're it's not a one man band. It's you've really got to have the buy-in from not only your best mate, it's your parents and your parent in-laws and your friends and your siblings, and so it's really important to take them on the journey, and I guess one of the biggest learning curves for me was actually telling people how I was feeling. Instead of trying to put a brave face on a Sunday after a 5 or 6 hour ride, and turning up to a lunch or a dinner and try and be, the life of the party, I sort of I was told that, you've got to say no, got to put a stop to that, take some time out. Go into the bedroom if you need to, but we can't have you being a sad sack turning up to a dinner, looking like absolute crap, and you need to tell us when you're tired, and you need to tell us when you're hungry. You need to, work out the signs of that. You need to tell us when you've got a big week. And I mean, I'm even finding that even this year, I'm still not perfect at that. And just the other week, my husband was saying, if you've got a big week coming up, let me know so I know that, you're angry for a reason. So it's yeah, I mean, look, to be honest, and just to clarify as well, I don't work full time. I'm very lucky enough to work part time, so about 25 hours a week. But we've got a little girl, 3-year-old, and to be honest, if Ivan, my husband, wasn't around, I wouldn't be able to do the sport, to be honest. Like, it just would be too much, I think, just for me personally.
Dana, when did you realize you were pretty good at this thing and you wanted to really focus hard and get really as good as you can get as an age grouper?
Look, I don't know if I yes, you do have to acknowledge at some point, when you start, winning your age group, and you get to go to Kona, that you do have to acknowledge that you do have some either form of talent or just mungleness in you. I think I've got more of the latter, but I guess it's probably been in the last year or so, or actually the last couple of years. Where I found this, I guess I've always had this drive, but it's where I just want to, I want to keep learning about the sport, and I want to keep learning about why is it, with the very best. And there's obviously a lot of reasons that I already know why that is, but it's about, where is my potential and how do I get to it? And so I guess that's what really drives me at this point. And it started, I guess, a few years back, after I had my daughter, where I got together with my coach and my husband, And we sort of spoke about a 3 to 5 year plan of just seeing how far I could take myself in the sport. And I mean, the first year I did my first Ironman, and then went on to Kona. That was great. I got a kick out of that. But I knew there was so much unfinished business, I guess you could say. And there was so much more that I could learn from it. So I really wanted to, you know, look at a sort of a 5 year plan at least. Well, that's as much as I could agree with my husband at the time. And I thought, right, well, look, you know, if we're going to do this, there's obviously going to be sacrifices made on from my husband's end, you know, even from my daughter's end, and she doesn't even realise it at this stage, and everyone else. So I think it was at that point where I decided that, yeah, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to learn, and I'm going to put the hard yards in, and I'll just keep chipping away and seeing where I can improve and where my faults are, and get to know my weaknesses as well as anything, so they become my best friend and they're no longer my weaknesses anymore, I guess. So yeah,
Dana, I love that you use the phrase that you got to have some mongrel in you. And talent, having talent is one thing, and this is a very Kiwi thing. I just come to know of it through rugby circles, because there is so much of that in New Zealanders that I see from the outside. And it's having this, for people who don't know what we're talking about, it's having this internal grit and the will to never, ever give up. And that's what I love about New Zealanders in general, is there is this, I don't know if it's born into you or where it comes from in New Zealand, but there is this thing inside of Kiwis that there's this never say die attitude. Do you think that's more important than having raw talent?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, look, you could have best talent in the world, and if you don't know how to use it, then it's, you know, it's completely wasted. Yeah, and I think, you know, having this this coolness, I think if you've got that much more speed, you know, you put in as much as you possibly can, because, you know, I get to, you know, if it doesn't happen, life's not over for me. I go back home to my family. I go back to work the next day, or, you know, a few days later when I can start walking again. Yeah, that mongrelness for me, especially, I need it, and that's what I want, especially in the run, in that last 10Ks of the run. So, you know, that tends to be the key word for me in the last part of the run, is bring out the mongrel. So, so yeah.
I love that. I think it's something everyone has to have, particularly I think in endurance sport, because it does. The second half of the marathon, things get ugly, and that's when that comes out, is the that internal drive to just never say never and just don't give up. And that's, and whether you're winning races or just finishing races, I think you need that.
Definitely, yeah.
Dana, what's still left for you to achieve in the sport? What are you, when all said and done, and if you look back on it, what would you have wanted to have done?
I'm going back to Kona again this year. So it'll be my fourth time there. Bit of a hog. but yeah, no, there's still a few things at Kona that I need to do. I'm in my, I guess it's my third or fourth year of this plan of mine. You know, if I can tick a few things off at Kona, if I can, you know, I've got so many areas of improvement that I can, you know, that I'm working on and can keep working on, that'll keep me busy for the next, you know, a few years, if I wanted to. But you know, I want to do a good job at Kona, and then after that, we'll be going back to Taupo, hopefully, if everything sort of, you know, if my coach still wants to coach me, and if my husband's all good with me, and you know, I'm appreciative of everyone's support. we'll go back to Taupo, and you know, at some point, I guess I don't want to be paying for a ticket into Taupo anymore. So it'll be sort of looking at maybe the next step, the next level. So I don't know if I can achieve that, but you know, I guess we've all got to have goals and dreams. So that's mine.
What are you most proud of in your fairly shortish triathlon career so far?
Probably in the last 12 months or so, I've done a few things with my nutrition where, like my moods and energy levels have really stabilized, and I am a nicer person to be around, you know, in terms of my husband. And, you know, I feel like I'm starting to get a grasp of how nutrition works and how your body reacts. And I'm starting to get a grasp of these key concepts of training and the different stages of training. And I guess I'm really starting to enjoy and love the sport, and I see so much benefit in the sport, not just for you know, my age, but you know, I look at my daughter and go, geez, any one of those disciplines, you know, can keep a person grounded, and you know, especially if you're working and you know it's a stressful environment. If you've got a family situation and it's, you know, it's not going that well, you know, you can get out there and you can, you know, run it out and have these arguments in your head with people that you're never going to hurt if you actually have those arguments with them. So I just find it's just what the sport is opening up my eyes to, which is it just feels like it's all positive messages that come across, and also the people that do it as well. I mean, I've made so many new friends through the sport, and you know, they're just humble people at the end of the day. They're just like you and I, and they also love having a laugh, which you need to, and the sense of humour that comes out, you know, especially in those long rides where you're just going, dear Lord, can this be over? And then you look around and everyone else is thinking the same thing, and you're going, okay, if these guys are doing it, I can do it for a little bit longer. So that's something else that I've really come to enjoy too.
Now, if you could go back and talk to yourself in 2009 when you were first getting into this, what would you tell yourself, knowing what you know now?
It's a hard question, I guess. Eat properly. eat like an Ironman. Sleep a lot more. And be kind to your body. Take the easy, really easy. It took a long time for me to grasp that concept. And you know, when you take the easy, you can really deal to those harder efforts. And that's where you put all your energy and effort. So I guess that would be the big thing for me is, you know, sort of understanding those sessions and you know, why we do those sessions.
I love that, Diana. And I think I'm going to wrap that up there because that's pretty much it. If you only get one thing out of this podcast and you want to be a good triathlete, it's that. Eat well, sleep well, do your easy sessions easy and smash the hard ones. It's 4 points and I know it sounds really simple, but that is the secret to being a good Ironman.
There's one more secret too.
Tell me.
You should all, well, to try and keep things normal, I always have a glass of red every night. So that's, you know, that's just something that, you know, just keeps me grounded as well.
Got to have balance. There we go. You got to have some balance.
There we go.
Diana, it's been amazing catching up. Thank you so much for your time here on the Kona Edge. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time today.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Brad.
And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you very much to Diana for joining us all the way from Auckland in New Zealand today. And I hope you enjoyed that. We look forward to catching up again tomorrow. I touch base with Fiona Carlin once again to talk a little bit about her Ironman swim. And that's coming up tomorrow. Until then, from myself, Brad Brown, keep rocking out. We'll chat soon. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.